From GPB News, this is On Second Thoughts. I'm Celeste Headlee. Georgia's own Jimmy Carter is one of the most recognizable Southern gentlemen in the world. What do I mean by that? Well, he has charm, a polite demeanor, faith in a higher power, a very dapper wardrobe, and of course, that accent.
My folks have been farmers in Georgia for more than 200 years, and we've been living around here for, 150 years.
But if Jimmy Carter circa 1976 represents the traditional Southern gentleman, what is a modern-day example? Who is a modern-day example? We'll try to answer that this hour. First, though, let's get your thoughts on this. GPB producer and Georgia native Don Smith volunteered to kick off the conversation.
Consideration can easily seem to be condescension. If I open your door, am I making a tacit statement about strength? If I sir and ma'am people, am I being misdirectedly obsequious? Do elders deserve respect simply because we have outlived the rest of you? If independence is the question, why should I give you my coat? You are free to dress as you please. If we are to be equal, should we not share the risk of walking on the street side of the sidewalk, whence geysering puddles, dirt, and runaway cars? Is it rude to have a chat about such matters when beginning a new relationship? Do we need a radically revised set of terms of endearment and get rid of honey, sugar, sweetheart, and similar high-calorie diminutives? I don't mean anything by it, says the garrulous gent. Exactly, says the offended party. If you really had respect, you would remember my name. And until we are better acquainted, my Christian name.
We always love to hear what you think. Maybe you want to answer some of Don's questions. Call us at 404-500-9457. We're also on Twitter at OSD Talk or post to facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio and we might feature your comment on the show. Keep your eyes peeled around Georgia this week. If you're lucky, you just might be able to score a selfie with Chris Pratt or maybe Winona Ryder. Good to see her name in the news again. Or even the former queen of daytime talk TV.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and welcome to the very first National Oprah Winfrey Show!
Just a few of the celebrities currently filming projects in the state. What are they working on? Well, let's go on set in Georgia.
Here we go. Movie!
We make films.
Movies?
Let's go to the movies.
Let's go see the stars.
Our friend, reporter Jennifer Brett of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Buzz blog is back with us. Hi, Jennifer.
Good morning. I'm still clutching my pearls over that guy talking about, do I say sir and ma'am and open a door for a lady? As soon as I get myself together over here, we can talk about movies.
Yeah, you seem to really take exception to his suggestion we not say sugar and honey anymore.
No.
All right. Well, let's
move on.
Let's begin with a non-Southerner, Oprah. She is the executive producer of a new TV series called Greenleaf, and it debuts on the OWN network this May. What is this about?
Yeah, this is kind of like Empire in Church. It's actually set in Memphis, but it's filming here in Atlanta. In fact, right in the West Paces Ferry neighborhood area. And it's going to be a family and all the sort of drama and trauma behind the scenes in their megachurch.
Okay, so Empire in Church. Let's just get a reminder of what Empire sounds like.
Company and my attorneys have assured me I don't owe you a damn thing.
You're going down. I'm not going to let you take my company with you. Everybody's just waiting for you to die, Lucius.
So it seems odd, having watched Empire, that you could turn that into something that was in a church.
Well, you know, there was a little biblical cussing in that clip. Damn, you know, it's in scripture.
But the OWN network has had some struggles to get the kind of ratings that Oprah wanted for it. Are they pinning a lot of hopes on?
Yeah, it looks
Greenleaf?
Like moving towards, you know, original scripted programming is going to be a new realm for the OWN network. Recently, the Belief series was a big hyped project on the network, and so looking forward to Greenleaf coming up this May.
And possibly see Oprah get back into acting?
Wouldn't be surprised if we see her taking on a couple of small roles. You know, she was a producer of Selma, the movie that filmed here in Atlanta and played a small role in it as well. Wouldn't be surprised to see her in front of the camera in addition to behind.
So let's talk about another original production, Stranger Things. And this is going to star Winona Ryder.
Yeah, this is Winona Ryder. She's a young single mom whose son mysteriously disappears. It's a supernatural type thriller. It's filming down south of Atlanta in the Scream Gens facility. Really looking forward to this one. It's set up on the coast, the northeastern coast, but filming here, of course.
And this is for Netflix. You know what? Mm-hmm. Kudos to Winona Ryder, because you said she's going to be a young single mom.
Yeah.
Winona Ryder is my age. She's mid-40s.
Like I said, a young, hot thing.
Oh, come on now.
She'll be perfect.
All right. So let's move to the big screen away from some TV projects. Tell me a bit about Race. This is pretty highly anticipated. This
yes.
is a biopic talking about four-time Olympic gold medalist Jesse Owens, who ran in the Olympics when it was in Nazi Germany. This comes out February 19th. And let's hear a little bit of the trailer.
Jesse, you have a chance to strike a powerful blow. Under the Hitler regime, we must not go to these Olympic Games to show our solidarity with the oppressed people of Germany. You get a chance to be a part of history and you're going to walk away from it?
I've got people looking at me for an example.
I don't care about any of that! Yeah, well, you're white, Larry. You don't have to.
Okay, this movie wasn't filmed in Georgia, so why are we talking about
it? Yeah, it's got a really interesting Georgia connection. It stars Stephon James, who does an absolutely superb job as Jesse Owens. He actually got going training for this role while he was in town filming Selma. He portrayed U.S. Representative John Lewis in Selma. And so that filmed here in Atlanta. While he was in town, he went and got ready for Race at the Georgia Tech track. Coach Nat Page got him ready to go. Jesse Owens had a very specific particular gait and a starting stance and had a very specific way that he ran. And so it was important to him to really literally step into the shoes of Jesse Owens. And so he got going for that role right here in Georgia. They had a premiere of it just the other night here at Atlantic Station. It's going to be a fantastic film. I really hope everyone goes and sees it. You really just get an idea of what this one person had to surmount, the literal and figurative hurdles he had to leap over, not only dealing with institutional racism at home, but then, you know, going across the way and taking on Nazi Germany. So you really just get an idea of just what a powerful, incredible hero of history Jesse Owens was.
This must be good. We don't often hear such passionate defenses or recommendations of
yes, definitely
films.
Go see Race.
All right. So maybe we'll get as passionate about this next one. This is probably one of the most anticipated sequels that we'll see this year.
Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Listen to these words. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Now bring it down hard. Solemn day. Put it together.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
I'm distracting you, you big turd blossom.
Okay, that is from Guardians of the Galaxy 1, but we are waiting for Guardians of the Galaxy 2. You just heard Chris Pratt as the starring role. The Part 2 has begun filming, right?
Yeah, they're just now getting underway. This is the latest Marvel production to film out of the Pinewood Studios facility down in Fayette County. Ant-Man was the first. Captain America Civil War was the second. And now here comes Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Chris Pratt has been a busy guy. He just finished filming Passengers with Jennifer Lawrence here in Atlanta. This is a sci-fi romance thriller about people hurtling through space and, you know, get to spend a little time together while they're out there. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is his next project. In between projects, Chris Pratt took a little time at 3 in the morning to dispense some wisdom from Highway 75 as he was rolling down the street. I have it posted for you on AJC.com. He really struck a very inspirational, optimistic, upbeat note talking about, you know, never giving up on your dreams and really, you know, putting 110% into whatever it is that you're pursuing. So obviously it's worked out for him.
And we've seen a lot of selfies with him. He seems to be a pretty genial person to run into on the street.
Yeah, absolutely. While he was filming Passengers, he went over to Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, met with some of the patients over there. So it's great to see him taking a little time out to meet some of the youngest residents of Atlanta. So hopefully he'll enjoy his time here during Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Okay, so for the next film, you may not know the name Benjamin Walker, but you might recognize his face, especially if you saw a certain vampire movie.
However, history remembers me before I was. was a president. It shall only remember a fraction of the truth.
That is from the 2012 film Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which I actually enjoyed.
You know what? I didn't hate it.
Yeah. I mean, I
wasn't mad about it.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going into Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter expecting...
It's not a documentary, but yeah, for what it is, I thought it was fun.
Okay. His latest role, very, very different from that.
Why do you make it so hard for me to flirt with you?
If I made it easy, you wouldn't flirt anymore. What are you doing?
Walking towards you real slow.
Why?
Because if I ran, I'd scare you.
Because
you bother me.
Okay, so not many people have romantic fantasies about Abraham Lincoln, but this movie has Benjamin Walker as the romantic lead.
Yeah, this is perfect for Valentine's date night. This is Benjamin Walker, who is a Cartersvillian. He grew up here in Bartow County and now stars as the romantic lead in The Choice, the Nicholas Sparks adaptation. Wasn't filmed here, but they were in town just the other day, he and Teresa Palmer, his romantic co-lead, to promote the movie. And I was asking Benjamin Walker, you know, what is it about Cartersville that turns out all these stars? Chloe Grace Moretz is from Cartersville. He said, you know, it's a small town. We really treasure, you know, time with our family and storytelling and, you know, kind of spinning a yarn. So I guess that's a good prep for, you know, becoming an actor.
So we're going to get an authentic Southern accent, I assume?
You know, I will tell you.
You're
I'm trying
say
to
no.
be polite here since I am Southern. I'm from North Carolina and I try to iron out my accent when I go on air with you, but I'm just saying sometimes Hollywood hits a Southern accent right on the head, and sometimes
it doesn't. Kevin Spacey. Oh,
yeah. So anyway,
let's move on. We got a couple minutes left, so we have time for one more. Fans of the Madea franchise have yet another sequel to look forward to.
We love Madea. Let me tell you, she's been everywhere. You guys, like, literally, she's gone to jail. She gets a job.
Yep, yep.
Where are you going to take her next?
Halloween. Halloween.
Oh,
yes, and it is hysterical.
Wait.
When those zombies come out of the woods, look after her, it's going to be hysterical.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's hysterical.
My job kicked them.
Yeah, right. But
I can't wait.
You got to see it.
I can't wait.
Okay, that's Tyler Perry's voice right there saying there's going to be zombies and a gun-toting Southern grandmother.
Well, you know, Madea doesn't suffer fools, so I don't reckon she suffers zombies either. Boo, a Madea Halloween is filming right now in Atlanta. This stars Bella Thorne, who was here for Blended and The Duff previously in Atlanta. Also stars a guy named Brock O'Hearn. And if you don't know him, you're going to get to know him. He has been dubbed by BuzzFeed as Instagram's hottest guy. He is great at standing around looking hunky and taking pictures of himself.
With his hair.
Topless.
He's the one with all the hair.
Yeah, he kind of looks like, you know, Fabio. Remember him back in the day? He's kind of like a modern reinterpretation of this guy. He's just like all big and hunktacular, and he's going to be in a movie.
Okay, one last, and we only have a minute to talk about it, but there's actually a young adult film coming out called Middle School, and it stars Rob Riggle, who he's been in a lot of stuff, but a lot of people know him from The Daily Show.
Yes, absolutely. Also, Lauren Graham from Gilmore Girls, and Griffin Gluck plays the young protagonist of Middle School, Worst Years of My Life. This is a great segue. It just finished filming at Westlake High School, alma mater of Cam Newton, Southern Gentleman.
Yes, and we will be talking about that next. Jennifer Brett writes the Buzz blog for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. As always, thanks.
Good to see you.
City woman, with your macho man, think you've got the world in the palm of your hand. Mansion and diamond rings, drinking pinks and...
Super Bowl 50 coming up this Sunday, a showdown between two quarterbacks, both with strong Southern roots. There's Peyton Manning of the Denver Broncos. He was born in New Orleans. And then there's hometown hero Cam Newton of the Carolina Panthers, born right here in Atlanta. Both guys played college for Southern universities as well. So is this perhaps the most Southern of all Super Bowls? Spencer Hall says yes, and he wrote a piece for the sports blogging website SB Nation that argues Cam Newton has redefined what it means to be a true Southern gentleman. And Spencer Hall joins us now to defend that theory. Welcome.
Thank you.
And also with us is editor-in-chief of The Bitter Southerner, Chuck Reese. Welcome back, as always.
Glad to be here, as always.
All right. So it seems to me, Spencer, and you kind of alluded to this in your piece, that there's two terms we need to define here, both Southern and gentleman. So let's start with Southern, because people something I found, I often say that I have three Southern grandparents, but then when I explain and say two of them are from Texas, I'm told they're not Southern. Mm-hmm. So there's a sort of a, explain to me what you mean when you say Southern.
Well, let's start with your case. You know, I always think the Texans can elect in. That's fine. They'll consider themselves Texan first, right? But they can run a Southern option, right?
What about Florida?
I agree with that.
They can pick it up. I always say that Florida down to like Ocala. Like everything down to Ocala. And then from there, you can have Southern influences. But there's clearly some kind of wall between Ocala and Orlando around horse country where that just evaporates. And you're in this weird kind of Midwestern Cuban diaspora that just covers most of South Florida.
What about up to Kansas and Missouri?
I think they might have Southernish tendencies. Oklahoma's like a borderland. Missouri, I don't comment on Missouri. I don't understand it, so I can't even, like, I know that they have some sort of super Ozarky Southern things going on in Missouri, but I've been there. I don't understand it at all. I'm going to leave it to other experts.
Chuck, are you on board with all these?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, ever since we started the Bitter Southerner, people have asked us, you know,
what's
Southerner? The South? Yeah, and the closest thing we ever found was a data map where a linguistics professor had mapped the usage of the word y'all across the United States. And if you look at the map, you can kind of draw a y'all line from about the Mason-Dixon line on the Maryland coast down through East Texas. And that one's close enough for me.
Okay, so that brings us to the term gentleman. And I want to play somebody that may or may not qualify, and we'll see how you feel about it. Let's talk about Bill Clinton. Charismatic, charming. Let's take a listen.
I have seen what's happened in this last 4 years when, in my state, when people lose their jobs, there's a good chance I'll know them by their names. When a factory closes, I know the people who ran it. When the businesses go bankrupt, I know them.
Do we accept Bill Clinton as the definition of, or does behavior outside of marriage, what do you think?
Well, I think that when you say Southern gentleman, and I wrote about it in the piece on SB Nation, that there is a term that when you say Southern gentleman, I think it's something that is said by people who are generally trying to put one over on you. You know, like when somebody says, I'm a gentleman, it harkens back to this like English school of confidence men who, you know, walk in and claim nobility and then aren't, right? So that they can, you know, get the deed to your castle or whatever. So, yeah, Bill Clinton qualifies. I'm just going to put Bill
under
up
that
there.
Definition, at least. And it's funny you say that because we actually got a tweet from our own Emily Jones who tweets, a Southern gentleman is something 3/4 of dating site guys claim to be the last of. I generally assume those that advertise this are not. What do you think here about Bill Clinton?
About Bill Clinton?
Well, and whether or not he's a Southern gentleman.
Well, yeah. I think he is. I mean, I used to work in politics, so I met him a few times. And he's, if charm is part of being a gentleman, then yeah, he's definitely a gentleman.
Okay, so let's examine here, because we're talking about Cam Newton, who we're going to get to, but let's go a little further into what are the characteristics of a gentleman. And let's hear, this is Wayne Duvall, the actor playing Homer Stokes in the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which is a caricature, admittedly.
Mm-hmm. Look, I happen to know, ladies and gentlemen, that this band of miscreants here this very evening interfered with a lynch mob in the performance of its duties. Well, yeah, it's true. See, I belong to a certain secret society. I don't believe I gotta mention its name.
So, okay. So there we have a very old, outdated definition of Southern gentleman.
I think it is outdated. And this is, I mean, like any term, it can
mean... guy was a scumbag from the start.
Right, right.
Does scumbag mean you're not a gentleman?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely, right? I mean, it's the kind of thing where if you call yourself something, you're probably not that thing, right? It's like giving yourself a nickname. You can't give yourself a nickname, right? Somebody has to append it to you. And one of the things that's associated with this is this kind of like... you know, inclusion into societies, inclusion into clubs, right? Like a sort of social reach, sort of a grasping, right? Sort of an ambition to be something other than what you are by appending labels and these kind of grand baronial, you know, terms of nobility to what in respect is something pretty modest and or, you know, just a basic hustler, right?
Right. But then that takes me to what, I mean, when you say Southern gentleman, when I said Southern gentleman to a group of people in Starbucks the other day, 4 out of 5 of them mentioned mentioned Rhett Butler, the character in Gone with the Wind. But he himself says, I'm not a gentleman. He's kind of, you know, he's a kind of a sketchy character. So what do we, is that sort of the traditional? Do we think of that character as a Southern gentleman?
I would, because Rhett has, I think, Rhett may be the archetypical Southern gentleman in terms of the positive sense, because Rhett's actually very noble in a lot of ways, right? But he's not necessarily a one-dimensional or positive character, who, by the way, I should mention, let's remind everybody, Rhett Butler is based on Margaret Mitchell's mother. That is my favorite.
I don't think that's reminding everybody. I think that may just be telling everybody.
In large part by personality based on Margaret Mitchell's mother, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, a lot of the time when we're talking about, okay, what are these values that, you know, you sort of use for this term? I'm like, well, one of the best examples of those was a woman.
So Chuck, here we're basically talking about, here's the bar. Here's like the traditional definition of Southern gentleman. Do you agree with Spencer that Rhett Butler fits that?
I kind of don't care whether Rhett Butler was a Southern gentleman or not, because, you know, it's like Gone with the Wind is one of the things.
It's Gone with the Wind.
Yes. It's that, you know, as much as people love that movie set in place a lot of archetypes about Southern history, Southern culture that were just so misguided and wrong, and that we've clung to for so much, which is why I got so jazzed when I read Spencer's piece about Cam Newton, because what I'm more interested in is how does that get redefined today in the multicultural society that South has become?
Well, you've given me a perfect segue, Chuck, because now that
That's
we've sort
job.
Of talked about the traditional, we didn't plan that, Spencer, which were traditional Southern gentlemen, let's move forward. And I find it hard to think this guy's a Southern gentleman, but let me get your opinions. Here's Kevin Spacey as Frank Underwood in the series House of Cards.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I'm about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God. One heartbeat away from the presidency, not a single vote cast in my name. Democracy is so overrated.
Okay, this is not the moment to talk about his accent. But this character is literally a murderer. Does that disqualify him from the category of gentleman?
No, not necessarily in this context.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd go along with that or not.
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily, because I think his, you know, he's definitely more on the huckster side of the definition, right?
Like, yeah.
That's the whole thing. You sure we can't talk about his accent?
I
want to talk about his accent. And I don't think necessarily, because, you know, this is I think more on the obvious scoundrel side of the spectrum, right? I don't think it disqualifies him. I just think it means we use this variant of the definition over here, right?
So you see gentleman, the term gentleman, as a spectrum.
I think you need to know who it's coming from.
Right.
Right. You need to know what it is. And like the thing with Frank Underwood is that he's the kind of person who would self-describe as that. Right. And if somebody's self-describing as that. Right. If somebody is, you know, in a different context, like I always think in New York, it's the person who's like, you know, I know what I'm doing. I'm an operator. I'll get you a deal. I'll negotiate. I know how to do this. You're like, well, that person's trying to take your money. Right.
Right.
That sounds familiar, too.
Right. Yeah. It should sound a little familiar at this point in the American election cycle. But I think, you know, Underwood would be the self-described type. He wouldn't be the type that you would even use this in a sort of positive sense, right? He wouldn't be using this in the sense that I'm an archetype that you'd want to emulate.
The okay. South has a long history of scoundrels in gentlemen's clothing, and I think that's what he's getting at.
Yeah.
Okay. We actually have this comment from listener Victoria Stans Abernathy on Facebook. She writes, a true Southern gent is a modicum of patience in the face of the vagaries of Southern womanhood, choosing to retire to a private place before screaming or guffawing with disbelief. Yes? No? Doesn't laugh at his woman.
Well, that just sounds like good behavior, generally.
Okay. So let's move on to another more modern version. This is Scott Wilson as Herschel Green. He's the older veterinarian, I think, on The Walking Dead. Selflessness, valor, all those things.
And nowadays you breathe and you risk your life. Every moment now. You don't have a choice. The only thing you can choose is what you're risking it for. Now, I can make these people feel better and hang on a little bit longer. I can save lives. That's reason enough to risk mine.
Okay, Southern gentleman?
I'd say in the positive sense, yeah. I mean, generally, Herschel on that show it would conform to, I think, our positive understanding, right? I don't think Herschel would ever describe himself as that. I haven't read the comics, but
maybe
I don't
that's part of the definition, that if you it's almost if you as soon as you describe yourself as a gentleman, you're disqualified.
Maybe. Yeah, I would say anybody on dating sites would probably agree with that, right? If somebody says they're the last, then I don't think that they would be that. But yeah, Herschel's there. In fact, The Walking Dead's really interesting because there are a number of characters who kind of ride that line, right? Who sort of are tested in terms of their character, and I think in a very regional specific kind of way, right? Like The Walking Dead is a great metaphor for a lot of the things that happen in the South.
Oh yeah,
it really is. Like anybody in the South who believes that they're trying to do something right will inevitably come up against people who they're like, I don't even, they might be zombies, right? Like if somebody, like if you confront the issues of racism or if you confront the issues of poverty, and there are people who stand happily on the side that you cannot possibly fathom being on. Right? The Walking Dead is a great metaphor for that. The Walking Dead is a great metaphor for existing somewhere where you're not really sure if anyone's on your side or whether they'll ever be able to hear.
So, Chuck, let's bring this home, especially since we brought race into it, and talk about Spencer's theory that Cam Newton is possibly the sort of modern ideal of the new Southern gentleman. What do you make of that?
I make of that something very positive. You know, one of the things that I have learned in the time since we started the Bitter Southerner 2.5 years ago is that there are a lot of African-American men in the South who really claim their Southern identity proudly. You know, like when I interviewed Killer Mike, the rapper, he told me that very specifically. I'm as Southern as you are. I like to hunt. I like to fish. I got a truck. But my truck just doesn't have a Dixie flag on the back of it because y'all lost. And so
it sounds like Killer Mike.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, he is a very gentlemanly man, a family man, an entrepreneur, an upstanding member of the community, you know. And Cam is pulling off athletic feats that are just ridiculous in their proportions now. And he conducts himself on the field with a sense of style that's like, you know, It's he's got guts.
He's got a sense of style off the field, too.
And he's got a sense of style off the field. And that's the thing about it. It's like the thing that makes him a Southern gentleman to me, you know, is that he appears to be the same guy off the field that he is on the field.
Spencer, why choose Cam Newton? Because you have, as you mentioned many times, you have another Southern quarterback. Why is Cam Newton your Southern gentleman?
Well, I think Peyton and Cam are good bookends to this same discussion where what I don't want to do is appropriate Cam. I don't want to appropriate, you know, black Southernness, right? But to expand the term, you know, that everything around you's always been Southern, like bad category when we argue what it is. We just have to make sure that, you know, that term includes the black community, because the black community is, you know, I think, has, especially in Atlanta, this is the majority community. You know, this is the community that I think culturally has contributed more. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, and it's the community that, you know, I think has written the definition of what we are, particularly in Atlanta, particularly in the 404, particularly, you know, inside 285. We can't just call it country. Like, that's typically what will happen, right? So we'll be like, well, Cam's real country, right? And Peyton's real Southern. No, they're both Southern, right? You know, you can use those terms, aren't necessarily interchangeable. I just don't want to, you know, limit him by saying, oh, that's very Atlanta of him, or that's very country. No, Cam's Southern. Cam's more Southern than I am. Cam is everything. Cam is loud pants. Cam is wearing, you know, Cam's dancing in the end zone. Cam is wearing loafers without socks. Like, I think that's the one thing I mentioned in the article. It's like, if you can't identify with that, right, is having an uncle who wears loafers without socks when he gets money. Like, that to me, he's Southern. And that term is as broad as you want to make it. It just has to include everybody.
Okay, so can we come up with a list of qualities that make a Southern gentleman? Let's listen to one more clip. This is Nate Parker playing Henry Lowe in The Great Debaters. And this character was very chivalrous.
A brilliant young woman I know was asked once to support her argument in favor of social welfare. She named the most powerful source imaginable: the look in a mother's face when she cannot feed her children. Can you look that hungry child in the eyes?
We have got about a minute left here, Chuck. Is there a list of qualities?
Yeah, just watch Andy Griffith and do what he does.
Honor your mother, chivalry.
Take care of people who aren't as fortunate as you are. work things out through diplomacy instead of violence.
Consistency, you said. Mm-hmm. Cam Newton, same on the field is off. Spencer, yeah?
Yeah. In large part, Cam is good in his community. Cam is great with kids. Cam's not afraid to get his hands dirty. That's a big thing, too, is, Andy Griffith is a hilarious example because Andy's Andy will talk to anyone. Andy is the same at 5 a.m. as he is at 5 p.m. He is the same person on this street as he is on that street. And that to me is that kind of even-handed willingness to get your hands dirty, patience. Yes, courtesy, not an outsized courtesy, right?
But not a showy courtesy.
Not a showy courtesy. I always think women have an important part in this because it's not being like overly deferential towards women, but it's understanding that, women are just as much of an authority figure as you are, Southern gentlemen.
Okay, Spencer Hall, featured contributor for SB Nation. Chuck Reese is the editor-in-chief of The Bitter Southerner. Thank you both so much.
Glad to be here.
Pleasure.
This is On Second Thought. There is a rising, growing criminal enterprise linked to something that you are possibly looking at or at least holding as we speak. Traffickers have made millions of dollars off of leased smartphones. After the devices are purchased with a service contract, the hackers then pull them off the network and resell those phones overseas for pretty high amounts. Gail Podolsky and Dan Solomon are two lawyers on this case. Gail is a partner with the law firm Carlton Fields. Dan is an attorney with a cell phone provider, Sprint. Gail and Dan, welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Gail, you actually brought this issue to me. So explain to me how this exactly works when somebody is trafficking a cell phone. It's paid for at some point, right?
Well, there are a variety of different ways in which these traffickers are obtaining the unlawful cell phones. Some are just outright burglary. We've seen a rise in violent crime associated with obtaining brand new cell phones because there is such a high market for their resale overseas. There are other more traditional methods, which we refer to as credit muling, where a handler guides someone that really doesn't understand what they're doing into a cell phone store to sign up for service, at which point they receive a highly discounted phone because the wireless providers provide subsidized.
They sign a contract saying, I'll stay with you for 2 years or whatever it may be.
Correct. Typically, it's a 2-year contract. And in exchange, they get a substantial discounted phone. Some providers provide free phones. And when they make those representations to carriers like Sprint, they are saying, I'm going to abide by these terms. I'm going to stay with your service and pay you a monthly reoccurring charge for your wireless service, when they, in fact, have no intention of doing that. And the minute they walk out the store, they turn the phones over to this handler. The handler gives them a nominal fee somewhere between usually $50 to $100. And then that handler walks over or drives over to a wholesaler and resells the phone. And that phone, after the wholesalers get a large enough quantity, they eventually end up overseas.
So, Dan, this requires a pretty organized criminal enterprise. How big a problem is it?
I mean, it's a huge problem for Sprint and all the carriers. So Sprint has lost tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars because of this scheme. And
hundreds of millions of dollars?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and the big reason is because when Sprint obtains phones from companies like Apple and Samsung, it's paying the regular rate, so, $600, $700 for an iPhone 6 or, high-end Galaxy. And then we're providing to the customer such a steep discount of sometimes zero down. So that profit, that amount of money is essentially lost if the phone never comes back on the Sprint network. So it's an enormous problem for the company.
So, Gail, this is an enormous problem for Sprint and Verizon and AT&T, but does then that become a problem for the consumer?
Well, there are problems for consumers on a variety of different fronts. One is, typically carriers have to spread the cost for their losses. So we have seen throughout the duration of this problem an increase in prices to consumers in a variety of different structures. But more importantly, the consumers are being harmed because they're not getting the latest and greatest technology, and they're not getting the proper bandwidth that they should be receiving because the traffickers are taking these brand new phones off the shelves and sending them overseas. So people in the United States don't have access to the latest and greatest cell phone models.
Why is that, Dan? That there's a limited number of phones, or why? Gail just said that it means that I lose bandwidth or lose access to technology. Why?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's one reason that there's sometimes limited numbers of phones. Another reason is that when the phones go from the U.S. overseas, they're typically what's called reflashed, so that they're changed into a phone that's going to work on a, you know, let's say a network in Russia. And the phones really aren't meant to work the same way in another country as they are in the U.S. So when that unlocking and reflashing process happens, the phone typically doesn't work the way it's supposed to. So let's say, you know, the way you access the internet or your emails might not work properly, or texting might not work. So the phone's not going to work as it should, and that's a big problem.
So, Gail, I described this as a growing enterprise, and I wonder if it's starting to really gain serious attention from law enforcement agencies. You guys are a law firm, so clearly there must be some engagement with law enforcement on some level.
Yes, we are. Our firm, Carlton Fields, is in active contact with law enforcement agencies across the country. There are several ongoing investigations with a variety of different handset traffickers. There was actually an indictment recently in Georgia regarding cell phone traffickers, and that's going forward and probably go to trial. We also sued a company on behalf of Sprint called Ace Wholesale, which had an office off of Chamblee Dunwoody Road. They were raided by the FBI several years ago, armored trucks, the whole nine yards. And the FBI seized a variety of different goods, and Sprint not only received a substantial civil judgment against the company, but the principal went to jail.
Okay, so Dan, how do you prevent this? I mean, if they are that organized, if this is just about either burglarizing and selling things overseas, it seems like that'd be very difficult to intervene.
Well, there are a lot of methods that the traffickers use to get the phones, and the biggest way that we stop it is by being very aggressive, particularly in litigation. So Sprint has filed 66 federal suits over the last 4 years, approximately, in 16 states. So we've got an extensive network all around the country. And if we see evidence of people engaged in these trafficking schemes, we file a lawsuit in federal court. So we've been doing that for several years. And, you know, it's not just litigation. You know, we've got public relations that we try to spread the message to get people to stop doing this. We work with law enforcement, so we do a lot of different things to try to clamp down, and other things as well. So it's a really concerted effort that we've been taking.
Gail, I actually read a story from someone who is saying that their phone was confiscated because it turned out it was trafficking. And this is in the U.S. Do some of these phones end up through eBay or however it may have been back in American hands?
Yeah. So, you know, the fraudsters, as we uncover them and try to stop them, continue to develop new ways to rip off the cell phone carriers. And one of the new methods that has been developed is, again, they're obtaining these highly discounted phones, either directly from the store or from customers that may be eligible for upgrades. And they're reselling them to major retailers to be used in their insurance replacement programs. So when you go to Best Buy and you sign up for new service and you know you're going to drop your phone or you're going to dump it in the pool, so you pay the $10 a month or whatever they're currently charging, and you do break your phone, you go to Best Buy, and through the warranty replacement program, they're going to give you pretty much a brand new phone. And a lot of times with the insurance replacement programs, they're actually providing you with a trafficked phone.
Because they're contracting from a separate private company.
Correct.
So Best Buy doesn't know they're handing a traffic phone over to a consumer?
Well, I actually don't know what Best Buy knows in terms of.
She's a lawyer. She's not going to say or not. But Best Buy, give us a call and tell us so you know if they're trafficked phones. So Dan, I imagine, I mean, when I go in to get a new phone every couple years from AT&T or whomever it may be, it seems like they put me through a pretty rigorous check of my credit report and my past bills and blah, 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 blah. How is it that we don't catch these, I think Gail called them cell phone mules?
Yeah, credit mules. Well, the problem is that the handlers who recruit what we'll call them credit mules are pretty sophisticated. So they know exactly what kind of credit the person needs to get, you know, a certain number of phones. You know, what are the procedures that a store is going to put someone through? So the handler knows all these things well in advance of going into a store. So they sometimes even run the person's credit before that person goes into a store. So they're going to know already how many phones they're going to get, what kind of phones, how much they're going to pay, exactly how long it's going to take, because a lot of times these rings will just go from store to store. So they know, okay, I'm going to get 5 phones from this store, then we'll go 2 miles down the street and get 5 more phones. So it's well scripted, and they know all the ins and outs of the process.
Yeah, and sometimes the cell phone traffickers come up with extremely elaborate plans. Recently, we filed suit in California because this particular company was engaging in secret shoppers. They were posting ads on Craigslist calling for, quote-unquote, secret shoppers to come in and buy cell phones at the variety of stores. But don't worry, it's not really a contract. You're a secret shopper. And so
they didn't even know, and when the cell phone company pursued them for payment, they didn't even realize they'd been signing a real contract.
Correct.
Okay. To a certain extent, this is kind of mind-boggling. But the other thing that was kind of boggled my mind was the amount of money. This is a lucrative field. Dan, do we have any idea how much money has been made in trafficked cell phones?
It's enormous. I would say the same tens and hundreds of millions of dollars that Sprint's losing is the same money that the traffickers are making. So some of the biggest traffickers out there, you know, when you get into litigation and you start looking in their bank accounts, you see, you know, tens of millions of dollars being wired into their accounts and going in on a regular basis. So it's astronomical how much can be made. Again, there's all different layers of the chain, but the biggest handset traffickers out there are just making, you know, bundles of money.
Yeah, I'll give you one example. We filed a lawsuit against a company in Maryland, and in public court filings, they said that their sales of phones to one customer exceeded $50 million annually.
So when law enforcement is pursuing this, is there a different level of punishment or prosecution for this kind of field? Are you able to bring, especially since it goes overseas, does that mean there's a different level that you can charge someone with?
Well, I'm not an expert on the criminal side, but in reading the various indictments that we've seen for this type of conduct, most of the time what you're dealing with is theft of stolen property. You're dealing with wire fraud and mail fraud charges, which, you know, have statutory minimums. And you're also having this goods seized. So and bank accounts as well. There's been several forfeiture actions where the government will go and put liens on your houses and take the funds directly from the company's
like bank
account.
Accounts are pretty healthy. So and Dan, what do we know about these traffickers? I mean, oftentimes when you get a very highly organized operation like this, you find that whatever criminal enterprise, there's usually they diversify, right? They have a bunch of different irons in the pot. Do cell phone traffickers focus on this kind of, as far as we know, focus on this kind of crime, or are we talking about a kind of a broader criminal enterprise?
Well, I think that law enforcement has uncovered situations where the cell phone traffickers are involved in other things, whether there's a drug angle to it, or potentially, I think in the past there's been certain terrorism funding activities. There's some, you know, nefarious purpose in a lot of these enterprises, but then I think that there's a lot of traffickers. They specialize. They know, hey, this is a lucrative business, and we can make a lot of money. So, yes, there are usually some other things they're doing wrong, but You know, some of them, this is their bread and butter, and they're focused on it.
I mean, Gail, obviously, one warning to consumers is don't go and buy a phone and hand it to anybody else for any reason whatsoever. But do we have to be wary about where our phones come from? Do we have to be wary about buying an unlocked phone off of eBay or an auction site?
Yes. I mean, consumers need to be aware of these issues and definitely do their due diligence. The proper manner, if you want a new phone, the proper manner to get those is through authorized resellers or the actual cell phone carrier. Another big thing I want to warn consumers about is your upgrades. The upgrades are for you only. Don't sell your upgrades to unknown people.
Is that illegal to sell your upgrade?
Yes. Most carriers, if you look at their terms and conditions, you are prohibited from reselling your device. That upgrade, if you choose to execute on it, is for you only. So cell phone traffickers are trying to take advantage of that. And it not only hurts the consumer because you're not getting the latest and greatest technology, but, you know, those phones are ending up overseas where they shouldn't be used.
And before we go, Don, does this make carriers less willing to give deep discounts on phones when we sign our contracts?
Well, I think the carriers are always thinking about that. And I think, yes, there is a fear sometimes that, you know, you give the phones for such discounted prices that, you know, you'll have these consequences. I think, though, that the market is the way it is across the whole industry, that in the U.S. where phones are just heavily discounted. So I don't think things are going to change in the near term. I think, we're always looking to get the best phones to customers for a very low price with the expectation that we'll actually have them as customers in the long run.
Meaning, it kind of sounds like you're saying nobody wants to be first. Sprint doesn't want to be the first one.
I think there's a point to that. It's a very competitive market. Yeah, so I definitely think there's a point to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. Dan Solomon is a lawyer. He represents Sprint. We also spoke with Gail Podolsky, partner for the law firm Carlton Fields. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our show for today, but I want to get your opinion on something. Tomorrow in the break, we're going to talk about injuries in football, and there have been a number of big headlines about injuries in the recent weeks. Do you think we can make football safer, or is it just inherently a dangerous sport? Call us at 404-500-9457. We're also on Twitter, at OSTTalk. Or you can post to facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio. Our show is produced by Sean Powers and Linda Chen with help from Taylor Gant. Lindsay Foster Thomas is our senior producer. Our engineer is Ryan Thomas. And Tanya Ott is our vice president of radio. For today, that is On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great day.